Hi, my name is Chip Spear, and you're listening to Earth Plus 30. Welcome. You know, working toward a better future is a multifaceted activity. There are many, many, many areas I think are very important to consider when we're looking at building a better future. It extends far beyond just sustainability and energy. I have been very blessed in talking to some amazing people about topics such as buildings, soil, water wells, social and economic disruption, sports and education, energy efficiency, solar power, a whole host of issues. But, you know, to prepare for a better future, we also have to create better products for our world. There are a lot of companies that are doing that, but I am talking today to one. Our guest is Michael Mulcahy, who has created a very unusual product, one that's it's an environmentally friendly cleaner and stain remover called Lorinex. It destroys the biofilm that microorganisms make to protect themselves from destruction. I had never heard of biofilm. I don't know if you had. And I had no idea how important it is ultimately to our health, including now with this COVID-19 pandemic. Lorinex is one of those products that I would consider a game changer. It will revolutionize cleaning unlike any other product on the market. It hits all those right sustainability, environmental buttons. It does not present any health risk. It's biodegradable, and it will definitely help protect us not only from this virus, but many other viral and bacterial diseases. So with that, I want to introduce you to Mike Mulcahy, who's going to tell us his pretty amazing story. Mike, thank you very much for joining me today. I'm very excited about doing this ever since I spoke to my friend Scott, who introduced me to you about this amazing product that you have developed. And talking to you, or in our short conversation, you laid out some issues that you're having trying to get this amazing product, this transformational product to market. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, who you are, and how you came up with Lorinex and why it's so impactful. Why are people interested in this? Then I'm going to ask you some questions about why I think that what you're doing is impactful for our future. So Mike, please.
Well, it's my pleasure, Chip, and thank you for your very gracious invitation to be able to tell my story, a very small part of it to you today, and I really appreciate that. So to begin with, of working through solving a decontaminant to be used against chemical and biological weapons, and one that was non-toxic, meaning that the existing mitigation to clean away particularly biological weapons or the toxins thereof, the materials or the liquids used to wash them away were in many cases or in all cases as toxic as the weapon ingredients itself.
I'm going to interrupt you because it's like biological weapons. How in the world did you ever get connected with that? And then let's kind of move on because this is like really fascinating. You must have known somebody or something.
Right. As an advocate for not only the United States, but also Western Europe. So everyone's familiar with the dirty bomb, you know, yep. 5-gallon drums of radioactive waste that you could then disperse and then really create a mess in a large civilian population. But also the case of that someone or some group of people that are highly organized, very motivated, can get their hands on weapons of mass destruction, they've already demonstrated a willingness to commit mass murder. So now there's a real risk to that, and particularly the easiest weapons or weapons of choice to do because they don't require necessarily much infrastructure are biological weapons, very simple ones. The more developed programs, for example, in the former Soviet Union and North Korea and some of the other countries, China, they've had ongoing programs where that the development of those particular weapons, if there was a leak or something can get out of their lab, meaning someone nefarious intentions could sell that to a third state or third party who's a non-state actor and then use that essentially as an asymmetric attack against the United States or a Western Europe country, then it would be highly desirable. So it's a big risk. And so my background was on the periphery as in the Navy as a pilot on aircraft carriers, but we always had to be prepared in the event that type of an attack. And we knew that if any type of exposure, you'd go below decks and then seal everything up, take shelter, but anything left out or exposed to that would have to be destroyed. I mean, there was no reasonable way to reclaim it. So, and even using decontaminant liquids, you're basically containing it so you can properly dispose it. So these are aircraft, and then in the case of the Army, they're military vehicles, and they're very expensive. In the case of Homeland Security, that now you have a civilian population in tens of thousands, and you have to find, and really the challenge is much more precarious because you want to mitigate or reduce the spread of these weapons, and then anyone would be exposed to this, find a way to very quickly decontaminate them while be able to restore them or not increasing the toxicity of the agent. So that's how we get started. One thing led to another, and it became very obvious that in general, the cleaning products and disinfectant products market worldwide, one, is very large, but two, it's also very underserved, and it's multifaceted. So not only hospitals and healthcare facilities, but really homes, food processing, really in everyday life, and particularly in our modern society, we've become one of the advantages of our advanced health. The drawbacks from that are really threefold. First is that these microorganisms develop a resistance or tolerances to different disinfectants. And we see that with morphine, for instance. Now it's been demonstrated that different sterilants and disinfectants have developed resistance to these sterilizing agents. So, yeah, so in vitro, not just in vivo. The second is that these products have their own inherent toxicity that are causing long-term health effects to people, and particularly the people with compromised immune systems, the elderly and young children, and their pets, and pets, by the way. And then thirdly, is that it is now obvious with the explosion of use of cleaning and disinfecting chemicals, which has gone up substantially over the last 40 years, that we see disruptions from this. So anything from algae blooms, particularly, or the essentially fish kills, or particularly erosion of particular types of plant life that heretofore used to thrive. So those are three aspects that when looking at a holistic view, while they keep things sanitary, that they also are creating their own set of problems.
So where did you come in to this? You're a test pilot in the Navy. You know, you're landing planes on aircraft carriers. You're aware of this particular problem or becoming increasingly aware of it after 9/11. But, you know, there are like 100 other issues. What drew you to this particular one? And how did you come up with this particular product? You know, tell us a little bit about that journey, and then we'll talk about the problems that you are having today. Some of that stuff.
The market or the products available are pretty much the same that have been in use for the last 80 or 90. Mainstay, and meaning the different chemical groups. There's only 7, maybe 8 different chemical groups. And so the one thing they have in common is that they don't completely kill all the microorganisms when they have to be killed. And what do I mean by that? Is that bacteria have evolved over 3.5 billion years to develop their own self-protection and survival system, which is called biofilm. And that is just basically a force of nature that exists. And essentially the steady or the rise of infections, particularly in sterile areas in hospitals, so surgical devices, particularly in endoscopes or catheters that are reused. And the reason for that is it's not that the sterilizer on its face doesn't kill everything. What it's not able to do and is not efficient at is killing the microorganisms when they've had the bacteria themselves have had a chance to seed and establish in communities and grow. And they secrete biofilm, and that biofilm essentially becomes a shield or an aegis against the disinfectant. And so then, and we can see that why our hospitals, even though hospitals are actually getting better every year, the infections go up, and some of these infections are actually, you know, resistant to new types of antibiotics. And it's not because more people are going in with infections. That's always been a constant. The difference is that the disinfectants or the agents used to keep them clean are not able to keep up with that growth of those microorganisms. So what we really sought out to accomplish was, one, develop a product that was, one, safe to use for people and remove the biofilm. And eventually it grew to a hard requirement was it had to be organic, meaning that if it was any synthetic components or ingredients would essentially defeat the purpose of being a completely sustainable product. And that's what we end up developing. And what makes us unique are really three key factors. Is one, we kill all the microorganisms by destroying. We do so with a non-toxic set of ingredients that is harmless to humans and animals. And thirdly, is that it is completely dissolvable or neutral in the biosphere or the ecosphere.
Microorganisms, are those only bacteria, or how does it work with like viruses? That's because that's so much on our mind these days with the COVID-19.
Bacteria secrete biofilm, and by some extension, some funguses do as well. Viruses are about 1/100th of the size of a bacteria, and they're not a microorganism per se. They are a particle containing a toxin that's either an RNA or DNA, meaning that once... So the one thing everyone accepts is that a virus requires a host, and that host can be any cell that comes from a living organism, whether it's a bacteria, a plant, an animal, or a human. So once a virus enters a cell, then it can quickly replicate itself and then take over the cell itself and the replication process of the DNA within the cell. And so therefore they're parasitic. The relationship to bacteria and biofilm and virus is that the recent understanding is that viruses can find a safe harbor or shelter within established microbial communities that are, it's just not one type of bacteria like E. coli or Salmonella. It can be hundreds of different types of microorganisms coexisting, and actually where the sum is substantially greater than the parts because there is a symbiosis of self-protection or survival. That where a virus that in the case of COVID, for example, the way it would be expelled from a human would be from a droplet, meaning encased by some fluid. And if it can land on the floor or concrete or sidewalk. And if that is a biofilm community, it can then be absorbed within that biofilm matrix and then find safe harbor and can essentially be, I don't want to say vital, but it can be latent and can be essentially, instead of expiring and being essentially inert and no longer a risk, can be available for reinfection to a new host at some future point.
So if I understand, it kind of will piggyback on an existing bacteria, organism, microorganism, and that could then transfer to a human host. So it could piggyback on the journeys in some way.
Not necessarily. There are different types of viruses. Some have affinity only for bacteria. The COVID does not. It is actually zoonotic for mammals, for us, and also birds. So the case of bats, for example. What it does do when it is expelled is just, in the case of being latent, is that it normally just on when someone sneezes and they're carrying this virus, those droplets would go onto a hot sidewalk and then they would evaporate, or they would essentially lose that moisture that essentially acts as its own self-protection for the virus in the cell, would eventually dry up and then becomes inert and then no longer becomes a risk. It is when it can essentially be part of, essentially hitchhike into these other microbial communities where it finds that sort of shelter.
And then that would transfer, potentially transfer, correct?
That's right.
That's really interesting. Explain to me, you use this as a cleaner for biofilm. So talk to me about that market, a little bit about the potential impact economically and why not only is it, okay, we're going to clean the surface of, my counter in my house, for example, but what are the other applications and why is this, you're decontaminating places from potential biological warfare, possibly, but kind of put it in the larger context too.
Right. So for example, to envision a very relevant application is what we're to actually clean sidewalks or pedestrian conveyances, because particularly ones in cities that have very high volume, and we know in some of the cities that there is a hygiene problem already that exists on the sidewalk with residual human waste, for example, where those things become essentially a petri dish for very large bacterial communities.
Mm-hmm.
And so our product will remove all those off the concrete and then without doing harm to the sewage system or the wastewater treatment system.
Wow. That's right. pretty significant.
Yeah. And so we're going through that process now to do a couple of demonstrations. Then you don't have to keep using our product on a regular basis. You can just use soap and water to just do a normal, really diluted dish soap.
And miles, hundreds of thousands of miles of sidewalks all over the world, right? Is this economically viable for a lot of financially strapped cities?
It is, actually, because the type of application is the actually service labor. And since they're municipalities, they already have their workforce that are really already able to already do that.
And they could do this by just using sprayers or something like that?
Right. Just use a sprayer. And then, so essentially you would spray the sidewalk with our product and then use it because it's concrete and it's been sitting in there for really decades. You need some type of mechanical brushing machine, which there are many of them, that would also apply our stuff with those brushes and then hose it off with fresh water.
What would be the impact? Any idea? I'm thinking about, okay, you do this, and what benefit does a city see? How do you measure that benefit? You could say, oh, people aren't going to get as sick.
Well, for example, the worst case, we're seeing both San Francisco and Los Angeles, the reemergence of medieval diseases. So it's not a laughing matter. These really can quickly become a massive health crisis for the population. By removing essentially that filth, for example, you're also reducing the propensity for rodents. Fleas really, if you recall back in the mid-age, essentially the carrier for the bubonic plague.
Interesting. So as just a regular homeowner, I would assume there are lots of applications in the house, right?
Very much so. So just from a general, so it's safe on food contact surfaces, safe to clean cutting board, particularly after cutting chicken or salmon, which you know they do self-contaminate. So it has that comfort, but also for outside, externally, cleaning mold and mildew or siding works exceptionally well. Cleaning outdoor decks and concrete and just a general tile and tub cleaner cleans tile grout exceptionally well. The only caution is marble surfaces that use a chemical sealer. This product is not recommended for that.
Okay.
The same way you wouldn't want to spill wine or lemon juice on that same type of.
Right. What's the market like for this? Competition or barriers to entry and that sort of thing. So, you know, we can start talking about potential, the problems that you're running into.
So we have really two challenges that in general is very appealing and has mass appeal to a consumer base from not only household cleaning products, but also to industrial and commercial cleaning products, including mold and mildew remediation after floods. The challenges, one is visibility, is getting the word out compared to, and then displacing essentially incumbents that have already established those business relationships. The other, which is that is probably more significant for us, and it is a barrier to entry, is even though we have demonstrated superior antimicrobial performance, and by virtue of our product safety, we are qualified as a minimum risk pesticide by the EPA, but that limits the extent we could make claims or public health claims around the product. So we qualify as a minimum risk pesticide by virtue of our ingredients, meaning we meet the criteria, which is the highest bar for the EPA in terms of product safety. But until you actually formalize a registration of your product with the EPA as a disinfectant, then you are not permitted to make specific health claims. You can only make generic health claims. Well, we're working with the EPA now, and there is some latitude post-COVID-19 shutdown driven by the shortage of disinfectant products, that there is an expedited process that we qualify for to receive a registration for COVID-19 because our product, the active ingredient, is used in 14 already registered products that have a COVID-19 clearance by the EPA. And the entire embodiment of our ingredients meet their criteria for safe ingredients. So it doesn't, there are no unknown ingredients that present a risk or an unknown quantity to the EPA that would prevent them from saying that this product is safe or not being able to disclose any cautionary statements about the product.
So where are you in that registration process?
The EPA to essentially sort out how my company and our product can receive that exemption or that approval to make the COVID-19 claim.
It seems like this is a really impactful product, right? As something that they would be very, very interested in because it has such positive ramifications to the general public all over in many different areas, right? And that they would be quickly responding, let's get this on the market, let's help this small company. How have they been?
I think that they have, over the last 3 months, been saturated.
Right.
So the volume of their workload, particularly in their workload predominantly, is review and essentially maintain a standard of qualification has probably increased by 100-fold. So at that point, there is a staffing issue, but also their work schedule has also been truncated, particularly because they're located in Washington, D.C. and Northern Virginia, where even Northern Virginia right now is still just beginning to reopen itself.
Yeah. A lot of these government agencies seem to be, they're open and operating, right? And you're just assuming that they're oversubscribed or inundated with requests that the current staffing levels can't really meet the need.
That's creating a problem. That's my understanding from discussions I've had with other people trying to pursue the same thing.
Uh-huh. So tell me what the next few years are going to look like. Are you guessing about getting this through this process? How long do you think it's going to take? Do you need any extra help, or are you bringing in additional resources to get you through this certification registration process, or what's going on?
Well, our first priority is to get our product out into the market, and we're doing that in a couple of different ways. One is these demonstrations, particularly in high need areas, particularly in some of the West Coast cities, that mm-hmm. will provide a benefit for them in the way their calculus of reopening. And you could see anecdotally, just today, as a matter of fact, that some of the areas that have reopened a month ago are now starting to manifest another increase in infections.
Right.
Essentially under its own weight during the summertime, where this is not the case. So something is happening where that is propagating the spread of this. That is not what it follows a typical model. And so, mm-hmm. In particular, we provide some benefit in that, in being able to sanitize just normal population or pedestrian areas. And there's an interesting book that just came out by a cardiologist in South Florida who essentially has demonstrated that bacteria and viruses can be tracked around on your shoes for a long time.
On your shoes, right.
So you can. He first discovered that because there was an infection in a hospital where he was. And then a couple days later, he had the same shoes and walked into another building on the other side of town. And those people got the same infection.
Wow, that's really interesting. You see this kind of playing out over a period of time, and the major barriers to getting this registration with the EPA is just a resource timing matter, and that it will come, right? Your other avenue, if you go one through the government EPA, but then you've got a kind of a normal marketing issue with a new product, advertising, letting people know about your product, testing or trials. Let me give you this, we'll trial it. You'll see what the impact is, a positive impact, so that you can buy more or tell your friends or all those sorts of things. I mean, is that kind of where you are at this
That's
point?
That's right. So in addition to doing, we're actually be doing a live demonstration in San Francisco day after tomorrow on cleaning sidewalks in the fashion I mentioned. Which helps us because if we're successful there, then that helps us as a small company because we use a lot of volume of our product.
Yeah.
Even though it's discounted, it's appealing to our different veteran groups, essentially being able to put our banner on their websites, which we'll be deploying next week. And then finally, appealing to some selected markets, for example, the luxury health spa industry. And the reason that is attractive for us is because we appeal to the three things that appeals to them. Is one, they want those facilities to be clean and sanitary, but also they're very mindful of harsh chemicals that can harm them or their children, and also environmental stewardship. So we really appeal to them in a fairly large way.
This also seems like not only veterans groups, but all these large gyms, franchise gyms, whether and just some I know, you know, Planet Fitness, Lifetime Fitness, Equinox in New York or around, they've got huge numbers of gyms, equipment, showers, saunas. It seems like it'd be a huge market. And most of these people that are involved in those ventures are very, very health conscious. Seems like a ripe market for what you have.
Yes, and it will be, but especially now as they are struggling with their reopening, they have a liability, a personal liability factor where they're only going to use products that are on the EPA's COVID-19 list.
Oh, interesting. You think that they only will or that they're...
Yes, that's right. And because they can't afford that, because the likelihood someone will use their facility and get sick, we're seeing that. And you can't pin one person at one place as the cause, but it's reels prescribed by the EPA. So we're doing everything right.
It certainly seems like you have a product that is at the perfect point of launch, right? With very, very few competitors. You know, people are concerned about, obviously, the COVID-19 virus. I think they also look at it as a relatively, can't say short-term problem, but it's a problem that is like a year or two or whatever, and then we're going to be back pretty much to normal. We are concerned about the future and similar things happening, but simultaneously, we want stuff that is ecologically friendly, biodegradable, organic. It's not going to harm the earth in a certain way, kind of follows the seventh generation model more and more. I think that more and more companies are moving in that kind of direction. And you're in that boat. So I would think that you're in a great spot if you can push it through the EPA somehow.
I agree. We're very excited about our product because we know how well it works. Mm-hmm. I guess it's a euphemistic to say that in a pretty face will get you a cup of coffee. You really have to. So the marketing is very important, and because it's such a competitive market, meaning there are many, many products, but the big players are very big and they dominate the market.
Tell us about some of that competition that deals with this, specifically with the biofilm issue or problem.
Yeah, none of them do that. So we are unique in that particular capability. But there is a consensus, it's almost Pavlovian, that people don't think something is sanitary unless it smells like bleach.
Right. That's so interesting. Oh, it must not be clean. I can't smell the bleach. I'm not getting poisoned. My brain cells are not dying, so it must not be working.
I have an article from the head of a major medical facility in the United States. I'm not going to say very renowned. He's a surgeon, so that's his thing. But he told the nursing staff is that if I can't smell bleach, it's not clean.
Wow. What do you say to that? I mean, that is just so crazy, right?
Well, that's what they've been taught. See,
I know. But it's just so narrow-minded to think that there can't be a cleaning agent that you can't smell. And it doesn't matter. Right?
Well, it's gradually changing, but that's been the conventional wisdom. So you can't, we've all thought that. Yeah, right. So you develop an intolerance to these products over a period of time. And then also the body of evidence, particularly childhood respiratory illnesses, have increased by 40% in the last 20 years. And it's directly attributed to household cleaning products and disinfectant. That's no small number.
Oh, that's huge. These products, I mean, there are so many different diseases and autoimmune diseases and stuff that are so prevalent in our culture now, diseases nobody ever had. And why do all these kids have peanut allergies? Why are there so many ADHD, increase in autism? Part of it could be we're measuring things better, yeah. You know, testing better, but still out of control. Gluten, I need gluten-free this, gluten-free that. I said, what?
Right. Yeah. Well, homes are also built tighter, so that's the other thing. So
That's true.
And so where our advantage is that we provide an alternative, and we're not saying that it's a zero-sum game. It's either them or us. It's that we provide that. We can provide a harmonic balance to this. Is where open water, or generally, you know, you don't have to use bleach all the time. You can use it once in a while because bleach does have its benefits, by the way. Mm-hmm. It's not all that bad, but to use it regularly has deleterious effects.
So interesting. Problems, if you said, hey, besides the money issue, we all need more money to get our products off the ground and, you know, whatever. And your product is not the only one that has had similar issues. You know, I could tell you stories about other products too, some of which I have been involved in, but not quite like this. It's very, because yours is so amazingly impactful. And this product, I must say, Lorinex is, go to the website, lorinex.com, look at the product description. You can buy it online and all that stuff. I highly recommend my listeners to go and check that out. But what's your wish list? What do you need to make this work?
Actually, two things. So short term is that one of these large cities will say, okay, I'll give it a try, and we'll do essentially 4 or 5 block span and see how it goes. So it's not going to be very financially impactful to them, which we can would do, which at that point it'll close the deal on that. And by that, it does a couple things for us. It puts us on the map as a bona fides that a major municipality is using the product for that. But it also can help us to say, look, you know, we really mean a lot for us if we can get some type of relaxation with the EPA to say, just give me this COVID-19 claim and I'll fill out, you know, we comply with the expedited procedures, of course, and say, give that to me for 12 months. And then if I don't have the completed thing by then fine, you could pull it again. But at that point, that gives us a much wider aperture into a market that we can, truth in marketing. We can't claim COVID-19, which everyone wants, unless it's approved by the EPA.
So why would they do that? If I'm the EPA, you come to me and say, I've got this product, it's great for the environment, it's great for A, B, C, and D, right? Just give me a conditional fast track it for 12 months.
There's actually three reasons. The first is that there's a shortage of disinfectants now. So everyone is backordered, which we would not have a problem filling those orders. Second, there's no risk to this because we already meet the criteria. We already have 14 products using our active ingredient, and then our other ingredients are on their safe ingredient inert list. So there's no risk on this at all. And thirdly, it minimizes the bureaucratic process of approving, not even temporarily approving a product. Just say, fine, we've just added another product without going through all of that manpower and labor to approve this, something that is already meets their criteria.
Another thought that just comes to my mind is, does this open the door for a lot of other companies to suddenly ask for that same expedited approval? And would they be overwhelmed and potentially be at risk for some kind of legal backlash, political backlash? I don't know what, but, you know, if they let you in that way, who else is coming through that door and could they handle that?
Well, there aren't that many products because the criteria, you have to have your ingredients already have to be established as one that have already been proven, which we do.
Okay.
Right. So that would eliminate that from the beginning. The other benefit is it requires no expenditure on the part of the federal government.
Well, they should like that. Everybody likes that. You know, who likes?
Yeah.
Who totally enjoys paying taxes? Oh, I love to pay my taxes. Here, take some more.
Right.
Nobody in their right mind really likes to pay taxes. You know, it's an obligation, but or what? You know, that's a whole other discussion, right? But
valid is if I give it to this person, who's the next one that's going to come around, which is valid.
I just think about that, and it's not necessarily in this product family. It could be in some other way. If someone comes and says, well, over there for the disinfectant category of whatever, you fast-track this. Why can't you fast-track me if I kind of meet the same preconditions?
That's a good question, and it's because this relaxation for expedited review is only for COVID-19.
Got it. Interesting.
So you can't essentially carpet bomb the whole world and say, give me all this other stuff. No, it's a very narrow exception.
Got it. So, I mean, that's really important. So this is, wow, really, really interesting. It's like if I had lots of money, I'd jump in and say, hey, this seems like a great product, can do great things. You know, and what's their biggest problem but going to the city of Los Angeles or San Francisco or New York and say, oh, let me try this new product. You guys got to try this. It's great. And you have no problem getting in those doors, right?
Yeah, but those cities really need help.
They do. But it is also difficult sometimes or oftentimes to get new products into any large organization because of the bureaucracy. So for you to say that you're going to do a trial in Los Angeles is, I think that's pretty impressive.
To unseat an incumbent is extraordinarily
good. What do they do? Do they have some product that they use for that sort of thing, or are they just not doing that?
They'll use generic products, but nothing specific. So one of the things that's compelling that is irrefutable in us making the case is that there was an NIH study completed at the beginning of 2014 where different species of salmonella were grown in biofilm and allowed to grow and fully mature. And the top of the line, top flight chemicals used as sterilizers were evaluated against those specimens of salmonella grown 168 hours specifically. The results were after 10 minutes exposure, less than 40% of the microbes were killed. So that means it wasn't 99.99%. It was less than 40%. And why that's important is that we have tested our product against that exact same species of salmonella for grown in biofilm for 168 hours. We had 100% kill.
Wow.
In less than four minutes.
That's pretty amazing. That's great. Well, Mike, this has been really fascinating to me. Really interesting about the product and your product evolution, growth, maturity, or maturation process, and then getting it out on the market and problems to do so. But it's clear to me from the way that you've described it that the impact is huge, both in the United States and all over the world, and that I wish you nothing but luck if there's anything that I can do to help this along other than to publicize this podcast. Please let me know. But this has been really, really an education. Very, very interesting.
Well, it's been my pleasure, Chip, and thank you for your hospitality. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and to our listeners, remember Laurinex, LAURINEX, is that correct, .com?
It is.
All right. Yeah. Check it out and, buy it because I'm going to buy some, that's for sure. All right, Mike, thank you so much. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, Chip.
Thanks for listening today. Do you have an idea for a podcast? Let me know. Visit my website, you can contact me there, or send me an email at chip@earthplus30.com. Until next time, this is Chip Spear.